Now it appears that my technology has reset itself in the course of, there we go, this. So I pull it up. Oh, that's going to be fun. So, we're going to try a different set of technology. And while I'm looking for that, I want to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story about a guy that I went to high school with. And his name is Jason. Now, Jason was in the grade ahead of me. He was one grade older than me. And an interesting fellow. He was a neat guy. But in his grade 12 year, so my grade 11 year, Jason went on a campaign. And the campaign was remarkable. It was a very interesting campaign that he embarked on himself for the entirety of the year. And he worked hard at it all year. And the campaign was very simply that he wanted to convince as many people as he could, ideally the entire school, that he, Jason, was in fact the center of the universe. In Regina, at Luther College High School, who knew that that was going to be the center of the universe? Really, right? And I was this close to the center of the universe. It was amazing. And he worked hard on this, and he would refer to himself in the third person, and he would talk about himself being the center of the universe, and he would walk into rooms, and he would say, the center of the universe is here, you may all now revolve around me, and all sorts of things. Now, this would have probably worked better for him had he been one of the popular kids. He was on the less popular side of the social structures in high school. And it probably would have also maybe worked a little bit better if there wasn't other egos in the school, as there always is. But it was an interesting thing that I was remarking as I was reading through this passage, this section of Isaiah chapter 40, and thinking about how we often think of ourselves so as being the center of the universe. And you may think, well, no, that never happens. We don't. Just talk to a child. I have two of them. They both think they're the center of the universe. Neither one is right, but they try to convince us of that. Or if you follow any of the Hollywood celebrities that also think that they are the center of our world, they're wrong, but they think they are. To Jason's credit, he may have actually given up on his campaign, but it wasn't until after he graduated. I'm fairly convinced that in the yearbook, I didn't go rooting through my boxes to find it, but I seem to recall very clearly that somewhere in his part of the yearbook, he was on the yearbook editing team, he managed to sneak in there a last dig at his campaign of being the center of the universe, and I'm not sure how he managed to slip it past, but he got it in there anyways. Now, most of us don't go to the same extremes that Jason did. Most of us don't campaign in that way. Most of us don't behave like a two-year-old or a four-year-old demanding that I have to have everything my way and have it immediately right now. Most of us have grown out of that and matured out of that. But at the same time, we still have this little bit of I am important. I am the center of the universe. And how I get to that is that we complain. How many of you complained about something this week? How many of you whined about something this week? How many of you wondered or grumbled a little bit about the unfairness of something that happened to you this week? It wasn't fair. I shouldn't be treated like this. The things like those are little statements of I am the center of the universe. Those are little statements that point out to say I should be more important than people are giving me. Now, it's easy for me to say because I'm up here with a mic and you're all looking at me, and at the moment, I'm kind of the center of the universe. It's great. But I'm not. And Isaiah and God is coming down and talking about this same concept. This isn't new for us. This is something that happened generations and generations and generations. And Isaiah is addressing the same thing, and God is speaking to the same thing to the Israelites that we are talking about. The Israelites going into thinking, I am so important. How is it that you, God, have not paid any attention to my plight and my difficulties and the fact that life isn't fair for me? God, show what's the deal? You created me. I must be something special. And that was their complaint. And the Israelites had this down to a science. They had it all figured out. And when life was good for the Israelites, they took it on them. They assumed that it was good because they were doing just such a good job of life. Of course everything is good. Things are coming up roses. Things are doing a great job. Why? Because I am so good at doing life. I'm following the rules so well. Of course I should be blessed. But as soon as something goes wrong, as soon as there's difficulties in their lives, in their world, what happens? They complain. Hey, wait a minute. God, why are you letting me down in this? Where are you in this? We don't have any water. We don't have any food. We should have stayed back in Egypt where we were important people because life was still good. Why are you allowing us to do this? God, how come we don't have a king like everybody else? God, we want to have. Why are these people attacking us? And so on and so on and so on. That comes through the entire history of the Israelite nation. And God must be tired of it. He must be so tired of it. And we have the same complaints. And we have the same issues today. And if you look through the Old Testament at all, if you spend any time, you will find very quickly a moment, many moments, of the Israelites believing that they are the center of the universe and the most important person. Now, this text in Isaiah 40 comes to us. Isaiah is in the unenviable position of pronouncing judgment against Israelites, as are all of the prophets that God sends, because the Israelites are messing it up right, left, and center. And Isaiah is one of the prophets that comes and has to pronounce judgment against the nations and against the Israelites. But in those proclamations of judgment, there's also proclamations of hope. And there's also proclamations of God saying, while this is going to happen to you as consequence to what you've done, there is still hope. I'm still going to do something for you. I'm still going to redeem you in some way. I'm still God in here. But you need to learn a lesson first. And so the Israelites are in the point of this lesson. They're under attack. They're being bullied by the other nations. They're getting exiled, and definitely, you know, exile is definitely in the cards for them. There's all of these things that are part of consequences that are coming in. And they, in spite of all of what they are doing, all of what God has done for them, they continue to persist in trying to be like the other nations by worshiping the other nations' gods, by following their sets of rules. And so God, in the end, allows them to continue in this vein. He lets them do what they want to do, thinking they're important, and the consequences will follow. And now that the consequences are here, they are changing their tune and saying, God, please help us in this. Don't you see our problems? Don't you see our plight? And Isaiah's message in chapter 40, that verses 12 to the end that we read specifically, Isaiah's message there is really, it's a response to that particular question, to that question of where is God in all of this. And the question comes around in verse 27. He says, O Jacob, how can you say the Lord does not see your troubles? O Israel, how can you say God ignores your rights? So the rhetorical comment that Isaiah is making there is saying, you're asking the question, God, you don't see my troubles. God, you don't see my right. What's wrong with all of this? And to put it into context, God needs to show the Israelites. As a result, he shows us that we are, in fact, not the center of the universe. I'm trying to read small print at this point. The thing that we miss, the thing that God is trying to explain to the Israelites, the thing that God is needing to explain to us, is that in spite of how important we are, we're the top of creation. When God created the world, and he said there's going to be plants and animals and trees and all these things that goes on, and he made people in his image, he stopped at that point. He said, it is very good. And we were created in this image of God and to have relationship with him, to be able to know him, to have will, to have soul, to have feeling, to be more than just instinct. We're the top of the creation chain, top of the food chain, top billing, as it were. And it goes to our heads a little bit. And God said, in spite of that, there's a bigger picture that you're missing. There's a bigger picture than just you, Ryan, in the middle of the world. It's not all about you. You need to see that bigger picture. And so in the verses preceding verse 27, he walks the Israelites through that. He says, look at the world. Look at creation around you. Are you getting this, Israelites? God holds the oceans in his hands. He measures the heavens with his fingers. Let that sink for a moment. God measures the heavens with his fingers. He sits above the earth, and the heavens are as a blanket to him. He sees a bigger picture of kings and rulers and nations rising and falling, but in the blink of an eye. As the nations rise up and kings and rulers rise up, he sees them and they're there, and then the next moment they're gone, and it is but a blink to God. It's time beyond what we can comprehend and understand. And the answer that the Israelites are looking for in this big picture thing, the answer that the Israelites need to hear is that yes, God does in fact see you. God does in fact see what's going on. He does in fact know about your plight. He knows about your joys. He knows about your sorrows. He knows everything about you. And so when you ask, when we complain, when the Israelites complain, say, where, God, don't you see what's happening? It's very unfair. My neighbor keeps blowing all of his snow onto my driveway. Don't smite him. This is unfair. I should be, God says, I see this, Ryan. But you need to recognize that there's a bigger picture. You are not the center of the universe. The universe exists because God says, I have spoken it into existence. You are a part of that. I will go on much, much longer than you will on this earth. And you need to keep that perspective. But we also need to know, how do I know that God does see what we're talking about? How do I know that God does see my plight? Because in verse 26, he says, look up to the heavens. Who created all the stars? And this is the point that brings out, he brings them out like an army, one after another, calling each by its name. Now, let's stop there for a moment. Picture in your mind's eye, if you can, the heavens. Looking up, you're out in the middle of a field somewhere. It is pitch black. It's a super clear night. It's the clearest night ever. And you look up and you see the sky filled with little white dots of stars. And you can see, can you picture that in your mind's eye? You get that? And do you ever go out and you just look and you say, wow, that's a lot of stars. God knows each of those by name. Each of those stars, and they're just burning balls of gas. Each by name. And God says, because of his great power and incomparable strength, get this, not a single one is missing. So not only does he know each of those stars by name, but he knows each star's placement. And he can point and say, yep, that star, whatever you want to call it, is still there. And if God knows each and every star's name and knows that not a single star is missing in the heavens and they're just stars, to me, that says that God knows my name. And in his great strength, power, and incomparable strength, he knows whether I am missing or not. He sees my plight. He sees the challenges that I'm facing. He sees the joys and the sorrows. He sees all the things that I'm complaining about. And he knows them probably better than I even know them, even though I'm the one complaining about them. And he says, my strength is so great that I can even give it to you. Now that sounds really nice. It sounds good to go, oh wait, well, I can trust God in that. That's fantastic. Because, you know, he's big and I'm not, and he's going to give me strength. That's fantastic. The problem is, though, that we tend to try to put our trust in God by doing things ourselves. I'm going to trust in God, but I'm going to manage that trust so that it goes well. And so management comes in the form of covering our bases. And sometimes that management of things going well for us means that when it comes to tithing, I maybe don't give a full tithe because I want to cover my financial basis so that if something unexpected happens, I am looked after. And, oh, look, something unexpected happens, but I have this money and resource for that. This is fantastic. Look at what a good job I did of being prepared for that, as opposed to trusting God to provide for us. Right, sometimes that's comes by paying it more attention than we should to perhaps maybe what the horoscopes say as a guide for our lives. Just in case, this is covering our bases, just in case the alignment of the stars actually does have something to do with what I should be doing next week. You know, and because this one's lined up with this one over there, then clearly I should be buying that lottery ticket. You know, there's Just in case, I'm going to cover my bases there. I'm going to hedge my bets. Sometimes we have that effect comes into how we view going to church. Sometimes it looks at if we go to church once every few months, we do so just in case. Just in case there is an existence beyond the 80, 90 years that we live here on earth. And we want to make sure that we're going in the right direction, just in case. So I will trust in God. I'll put my hope in all that he has to do. But I'm going to manage that by covering all of my bases. And God says that's not the point. That misses the whole thing. He says, have you not heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. But here's the kicker. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. Let me rephrase that a little bit. Even those who plan for everything and manage their lives really, really well can come to ruin on their own. Even all the things that I try to do and to make it work and right so that everything is safe and everything is good and I'm going to have the best chance at success can still fall apart. Even as strong as I think I may be, if I'm working out and eating properly and stuff, I can still be brought low by sickness. I can still have weakness enter in. No matter what I do on my own, I can still become weak and tired, and fall in exhaustion. But God says, and here's the encouragement for us, and here's the thing, the promise that he makes, and the hope that he brings into this whole passage in Isaiah. So when we have the idea of the big picture of just where we are in relationship to God, and how we fit in the whole picture of it, he says, here's the thing, but those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. People will not stop complaining to God. Our children will do it. Our children's children will do it. That's going to remain a constant. And in the face of all that complaining, God will respond with His power. How big He is, how immense His power is, and how invested He is in each detail of this great universe that has been brought about by His hand. And His promise to us remains consistent and current, that everyone who puts his trust in Him will find strength to endure and even rise above whatever situation is being faced. And this is strength and resilience beyond anything that we can manage, anything that we could muster on our own. It is from God. And He gladly, this is important, He gladly gives of it. The question is for us and for the Israelites listening to Isaiah at this time, the question really isn't, God, did you hear what's going on? God, are you paying attention? The question really is, are we going to give all of our trust and focus and hope to God in order to receive all that He has in store for us? That's the question for us that you need to answer, I need to answer. And we don't need, and that's not just a one-time answer, it's a daily answer. Every time we feel ourselves thinking, hey, wait a minute, I can manage this. I can, if I do this, I'll look after myself. Well, I will provide for my family. I will do all this. No, no, no. Do you trust God to know what you need to lift you up when you stumble and fall? Because God promises He will do that, and He has the strength in abundance to make it happen. We just need to see the big picture of it all. Let's pray. God, we thank You for the promise, encouragement that You give us, that You are bigger than we are, and Your strength is beyond measure and more than we could possibly ever need or imagine that we need, and You give it to us as we need, so that when we stumble and fall, You in Your strength will be able to raise us up, and that we would soar on wings as eagles, to be able to glide and be held up by Your wind, by Your strength. And that Your majesty would be seen in that. May we be, God, a people who trust, who put our trust and put our hope in You in all things. And we pray these things in Your Son's name. Amen.